And now, it's time to sit back and enjoy the Two True Freaks Internet Radio Broadcast.
...2008. The prequel trilogy is over, and millions of fans are left without Star Wars. Enter a brave group of Jedi led by Dave Filoni, who brought tales of the Jedi, clone armies, and Mandalorians to Cartoon Network, thus keeping hope alive in the galaxy. Welcome to J-Guys and Jedi!
Hi everyone, welcome to a brand new episode of J-Guys and Jedi, a weekly podcast covering every episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. In this episode, Anakin, Ahsoka, Obi-Wan, and Mundi leave a landing party to destroy a droid factory on Geonosis. They must stop it before it becomes active. There will be brutal battles, screaming wrecks, and lighting bugs on fire with flamethrowers. It's a hot one this week. Get it? Because of the flamethrowers?
Oh.
We're talking about landing at Point Rain. Badunsha!
Oh.
How you doing, Chris?
I'm doing pretty good. I was doing a lot better before that joke.
Oh, come on. It was a good one.
Oh, the humanity. The buckanity.
Hey, I totally agree with that. You know, that is the proper way to kill a bug, is with a flamethrower. You see a spider, you burn your house down. If it's on your baby, you throw the baby in the trash can. If there's a spider on your dog, you just leave it. I mean, that's the proper way to kill a spider. You set it on fire.
You people are so, hostile to nature.
Hey, I have a rule. If I'm outside, then I'm in their house. You know, I don't mess with bugs if I'm outside. I'm in their house. You know, there's no reason for me to ever mess with a spider when I'm outside. The moment it comes into my house, it fucking dies. And by dying, I mean I pick up a cat and I show the cat the bug. And the bug will bat, the cat will bat at the bug for 20 minutes and then eat it. That is the proper way to kill a spider.
That's more of the circle of life there, going out there. When you got a cat involved.
I get my hands dirty.
I let the spiders go. I even let the creepy spider in my room that stalked me every night.
Mm-mm.
I even let that sucker go. It would come out. I had these tapestries hanging on the wall, and it would come out from behind a tapestry, and then it would sit. It would walk around the perimeter of my room, and then it would sit directly over my head on the ceiling.
I hear Chris Tyler crawling up the
then
wall
I'd go
right
to sleep.
Now.
And I was like, why is it doing it? Is it waiting to drop down and suck my vital fluids out of my face as I sleep or drop into my throat and be digested?
No.
So I looked it up on the internet and it turns out it was just there to drink in my sweet, sweet exhalations.
Mm.
Bugs like the CO2 that you breathe out. That's how you get. That's how mosquitoes find you too. They follow your breath.
Mm.
And that's also if you breathe on. If you especially if you're a carnivore, you breathe on a wasp or a bee, and they more defensive and they will attack you.
Mm.
I'm just trying to set up some empathy with the bugs for this episode, okay?
All right. Here's my TMI bug story. Ready? So, when I was in college, I was dating this guy, and we were, pretty serious. We dated for, 2-3 years, right? But the thing is that, the house that he was staying in was just, really old. Terrible insulation. Between the floorboards, you could see the dirt foundation under the house.
Wow.
It was just an old house. So, of course, they had a ton of bugs. There was just, they did their best to try to keep them away, but we were all poor college kids, so they couldn't, pay for an exterminator. And so, there were always bugs around. Well, one night, after some lovin', we were laying in bed, and I woke up in the middle of the night, and I felt something, and I looked down, and I pulled back the covers, and there's a cockroach about, I would say about 3 inches long, very close to, on my upper thigh, very close to my hoo-ha, and I freaked the freaking out, man, because I wasn't wearing anything. We just had love in, and I, like, freaked out, and that's why I have to sleep in underwear, because I'm afraid that there will be roaches who will lay eggs, and I will be, like, the beginning of a horror movie and just, like, give birth to millions of roaches.
It reminds me of a Barry White song. After the lovin', there's a big bug on you. That reminds me of a story of my first girlfriend in college, and luckily I was not there for this story, but she was a little kid and staying at her grandmother's, and she fell asleep, and she woke up, and the cockroaches came out and were eating, like, her fingernail cuticles. Chewing on her fingernail cuticles. God. Yeah.
We should get started with the episode. I just ate and I just feel sick.
I shouldn't have told that story. I'm trying to build a little bit of bug empathy.
No, there is no bug empathy. Kill all the gene agents. Oh, wait. Vader and the Empire did. Anyway, you ready?
I am ready.
All right, so... Landing on Point Rain is the 27th episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars. It was given the special advance airing date of November 4, 2009 on Cartoon Network, following a 3-week break of new episodes, and is the second of a 5-part storyline of the Second Battle of Geonosis. It was written by Brian Larson with supervisor writer of Drew Z. Greenberg and directed by Brian Callan O'Connell. I tend to like Brian's episodes. Anyway... some extra information about the episode. Is it Ki Adi Mundi? Ki Adi Mundi?
I think that's right.
Okay. In the episode, Ki Adi Mundi's line, "There is no such thing as luck," is a direct reference to Obi-Wan Kenobi's line, "In my experience, there is no such thing as luck," in Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. Dave Filoni said in the episode featurette that the story we see in the episode wasn't what George Lucas originally had in mind. George wanted a D-Day-like attack. When he watched the episode, Dave realized they had more work to do. He used the analogy that he, Dave, was like Vader in A New Hope, and George Lucas is the Emperor. George came in and, quote-unquote, completely destroyed our Death Star. He completely redid the entire story and made a new episode on an incredibly tight schedule. He praised the production team for knocking out the episode and delivering on it. George brought in a ton of live-action footage from World War II film reels and movies like Black Hawk Down and Saving Private Ryan for reference. They tried to reference these movies for the episode, or they tried to mimic these movies for the episode. Dave and director Brian looked at each other going, "Man, if we can actually do this, it's going to be awesome." And in this episode, featurette for this episode, there was a disturbance in the Force. Dave Filoni wasn't wearing his hat, and it was really weird. But he has lovely hair.
Ah, well,
Dave Filoni like rarely doesn't wear his hat. He always has his like Cad Bane cowboy hat on. So when I was watching the episode feature, I was like, "Is that Dave Filoni's hair?" But man, this was a good episode.
Well, the Black Hawk Down footage really explains a lot, because there's two total Black Hawk Down moments where the troop carriers crash in this one for sure.
I've never seen Black Hawk Down. I just knew Orlando Bloom is in it.
It's good. It's gritty. It's very much like this episode. It's pretty much just the story of a battle, I guess. It's not an organized battle like this one. It's a situation that happens, but that's basically the movie. The situation starts, happens, and ends, and then the movie's over.
Yeah, I'm not actually... This is about as close as like I like to come to watching war stuff. It's just not my cup of tea. It's not my wheelhouse. This is about as close as I want to come to watching them.
Oh, this is pretty close.
Yeah, yeah.
Less blood, unless it's bug blood.
Oh,
boiling
man.
Bug blood.
If this was actually like straight up like a war movie, this would so be rated R.
Big black bugs bleed blue blood.
So, I'm going to give you the space platitudes with Yoda, but I feel like it doesn't fit the episode at all.
It was this would be a hard one to, there's real, no real moral to this story.
Maybe the moral to the story, if they had don't go to war with Geonosis.
Well, yeah, well, this was not one full of subtext or anything. Maybe if the platitude was something about keeping score, you know. but it wasn't. This is what it was.
Believe in yourself, or no one else will. In bed.
But it's still good for in bed.
It works in general in bed, but it just doesn't really work in the episode, no.
Oh, but Yoda always makes it better.
Sometimes I don't know if these space platitudes were actually written for the episode or just drawn out of a hat and plunked onto the beginning of the episode.
You know that we've had a feed like that so far. We're just like, what is this referring to?
Yep.
Alrighty, Aphrodite. So, Act 1.
I'm ready.
Alrighty. So, Act 1. With more planets joining the Separatist cause, the clone armies are being worn thin. Geonosis leader Poggle the Lesser has a brand new droid factory on his planet to make more and more droids. The Jedi arrive in a massive fleet to try and retake Geonosis. Obi-Wan Kenobi and Ki Adi Mundi lament about having to return to the planet so soon after the events of Episode 2. Anakin and Ahsoka arrive, and much to Obi-Wan's chagrin, have a friendly competition going about how many droids they've taken out. Obi-Wan is starting to worry about how long this war is taking. It's not a quick end. It's not the quick end that they were hoping for. This is why they need to retake Geonosis. They arrive at a briefing with Hollow Sky Luminara, Yoda, Web Blanket Windu, and Palpatine. They want to get Poggle, who's holed up in his factory protected by shields. Mundi, Obi-Wan, and Anakin will stage a 3-prong attack to get to the landing zone. From there, they will storm the factory. Palpatine feigns being worried about the 3 Jedi generals going after one guy, but Yoda says they must capture Poggle for Geonosis to be taken. They end their Hollow Skype meeting as Commander Rex, Commander Cody, and Mundi's Commander Jet enters. Cody outlines again how they will come in and where the rendezvous point is. Ahsoka also points out there's a huge fortified wall protecting the factory, but Anakin is like, nah, we ain't going there, kid. No problemo. Obi-Wan and Anakin banter a moment, and Luminara is like, girls, please, we have a freaking war to fight, so shut it. In the hangar, Cody admits he wasn't a part of the first battle of Geonosis. Obi-Wan says, oh boy, it was a riot being chained to a pole with animals there to eat me. For the Geonosians, that is. The ships move out, and the battle begins. So what did you think about Act 1, Chris?
The first thing that jumped to my mind is Poggle. I love that name. I think they should have licensed a Boggle. They should have had Poggle Bug Boggle. Star Wars Poggle Bug Boggle.
It does. It sounds like it's like Scrabble or something.
The first thing I notice is this has, once again, this one has extremely good sound design in it. Just there's a sound for everything going on, and once we get into the battle, it's chaos. But it's just amazing, and the music at the beginning is this very marchy war music, and it just builds it has a sort of evil tension to it.
I talked about the music a couple times, but this was Kevin Kiner just doing a great job at life in general.
And when this gets going, the first thing I thought is, man, this is, for one, this is, you know, of course, reminiscent. They just brought up Episode 2, and it's on a planet fighting aliens from Episode 2. But boy, the battles are done better. You're just drawn into them way more in this. And
they're so smooth.
Smooth and exciting. You know, there's always ships like coming up over a bend in something, and you see the battle unfold in front of them, and point of view shots and crashing shit. You know, lots of ships getting shot down by the Geonosians, and half is that fun Star Wars sort of visual with the Geonosians sort of sticking sideways out of their like almost biplane like cockpits and shooting at the ships, and you know, super realistic shaky cam war footage. And when you were saying about George Lucas stepping in heavily on this episode, you could see it. That explains a lot of why this is just so incredibly visually arresting.
Yeah, I only really had 2 notes about Act 1. And the few war movies I have seen, there's always that moment where everyone's kidding around and having a laugh and stuff, and it's before all the shit goes down, and that's what Act One reminded me of with Anakin and Ahsoka.
Mm-hmm.
They're just joking around, and Obi-Wan's like, oh my god, focus, please. But
it's kind of weird hearing Jedi talking about how many kills they have, but they're robot kills, I'm assuming.
Yeah, because that's what they've been fighting so
until
far.
Until
like
this episode.
Yeah, I feel like Anakin, if like it was taking lives, they would feel better. So, but yeah, and then the only other note I had, it's kind of a two-part note, about the line that Obi-Wan said about the war drawing out and how much time do we have. How much time do you have? First was a question, second was a thing. My question was, Obi-Wan talked about the war drawing out. How much time do you think has passed? I was thinking they're probably about 6 months into the Clone Wars, based on the Ryloth episodes being a relatively early conflict. But we also know that the Clone Wars airs out of chronological order.
Yeah, so it's sort of hard. I mean, you can sort of, I guess, go in general how far they are, but you can tell they're early on into the Clone Wars.
So they're
having little competitions and stuff like that. They're not getting weary of it, you know?
Yeah.
Or worn down by it.
So how much time do you think has passed?
Less than a year.
I was thinking 6 months to maybe 9 months tops.
Yeah, because I'm figuring about a year's gone by, that's when I think everybody's, you know, from the top down into the populace are going to start going, all right, when is this going to be over?
Mm-hmm.
So it's not to that point. It's still just
fine.
It's this thing that the Jedi think, oh, we're fighting and stuff, but you know, a few months from now we'll just be sort of cleaning up the aftermath and back to business as usual.
Yeah, because the reason I'm asking, I like that Obi-Wan brings up this point. We know that the war is starting to take longer, which is a reason why people begin to distrust the Jedi. It's what allows Palpatine to order Issue 66. And back in Liberty on Ryloth, Sham Syndulla brought up how long would it take before he start fighting Jedi. So it's just kind of a nice... It almost seems like a throwaway line, but it's a nice line setting the tone of, buckle in, we still have 2 more years of this war.
Yeah.
So I just really liked that line a lot. So I didn't have anything else for Act 1.
Yeah, the only, once again, I think we talked about this actually before we started. This isn't a very, like, this doesn't have a lot of subtext to it, you know? This isn't an episode where it's going to be big character building. We're going to see little aspects of people's characters, but, you know, it's not going to be pushing the story along, the wider story along. It is basically just a fight, you know, from beginning to end. And I was thinking during this, it's just like, okay, this is kind of a shallow episode, but you know what? They earned that.
Yeah.
They've earned the right to every once in a while have an episode that's just pure visual fun.
And I didn't mention it, but in the episode featurette, Dave Filoni wanted to have a big fight episode following the romantic episode of last week with Senate Spy. So that was something like he purposely did. Like he set it up so there would be an episode following it.
And it's awesome. It reminds me of the early episodes where they would just do this. You know, it's almost like a little like tactical 101 episode. Where it's also usually like in those episodes up to this point, the Jedi are like, okay, here is what we're going to do. And then you see them do it. And this one, it all breaks down on all three points of their attack and how they deal with it at that point.
Yeah. So, Act 2?
Act 2.
All right, Act 2. The invasion begins. Lock in your feelings because it's about to get brutal. Obi-Wan's troops move in first. The Geonosians blasted our heroes with their cannons. Republic ships explode left and right. Clones scream in anguish as they burn up in the gunships. Some hang on for dear life on the side, only to lose their grip and plummet to the ground. Anakin, Rex, and Ahsoka move out to join the fray. Yularen wishes Mundi luck as they leave third. The Jedi ships are taking huge losses as droid ships rain down from above. Some kamikaze into the Republic ships. Suddenly, Anakin and Ahsoka's ship takes a hit. Mundi realizes that the flak is too heavy and they lose contact with Anakin's team. Anakin rallies his men and force blasts out the doors. They take position and fire back at the Geonosians as Anakin mows them down with his lightsabers. The bugs start falling back and Ahsoka and Anakin push forward. Mundi's ship takes a hit and he barks for Cody's troop to get the tanks down. Cody's forces have made it past the attack and begin their landing sequence. I just want to point out that we're only 6 minutes into the episode. This was the 6 minute mark, so there's so much more to come. Cody warns Obi-Wan that the landing zone is too dangerous, but Obi-Wan shouldn't land. But Obi-Wan has nowhere else to go. His ship suddenly takes a hit and they crash into the surface. Jet informs an injured Mundi that Cody has made it through, but they lost contact with Anakin's forces. Mundi is in a quiet zone, so he loads up his men and tanks to push forward to the rendezvous point. Rex informs Anakin about Obi-Wan being shot down. Ahsoka is worried, but Anakin tells her to focus. They need to mobilize and keep going forward. Hey, it's Waxer and Boyle from Innocence of Ryloth! Cody sends them out to the battlefield to check for survivors on Obi-Wan's downed ship. The Geonosians are starting to split up, boding ill will for our heroes. Waxer and Boyle race out to the ship and find only Obi-Wan and a clone who we will name Lucky as the only ones who are left alive. Cody lays down cover fire, and when Obi-Wan makes it back, he informs Kenobi that the news isn't great. Obi-Wan says they just need to hold out in their position until the others arrive. Oh my god! Okay, so, Act 2, when the battle actually begins.
Yeah, Waxer and Boyle.
Yeah!
Like, yay, here they are, and they had some weird, colorful costumes.
Yeah, it was, I kind of liked their desert costumes.
They were all decked out.
Yeah, I actually had a note about Waxer and Boyle. You know how a lot of clones like Rex and Five get, like, really awesome, like, character arcs throughout the seasons? I wish they would have done that with Waxer and Boyle more. After this episode, we don't see Waxer again until Umbara in season 4. And this is Boyle's final appearance in the show, with the exception of what would have been the second half of season 6 in the book Dark Disciple. He shows up in Dark Disciple. But they're such a fun duo together.
I guess it makes it more realistic. Just not as fan-friendly, you know? It's just that sort of... It's that wartime thing where, like, hey, I know those two guys, you know? In the middle of a battle, and then they're gone. They're just sort of like these ancillary characters. I guess this is the only part that has sort of character development in it, with when, Anakin is sort of, talking to Ahsoka about, you know, basically attachment issues, which is his big issue. But we've already sort of covered that more in depth. I don't remember which episode it was, but back a few a couple times, I think we've had, you know, references to Anakin's attachments and to I think with Anakin's attachment to R2 and with Ahsoka's attachment to Anakin. So it's something. It's not a new. It's just sort of it doesn't come out as something new to their characters, but just as sort of a little reminder, you know, element of it. So it's helping preserve this as a pure fluff episode. And I love there's a Laurel and Hardy reference in it.
There is?
That's a bit meta, yeah. Where she says, well, this is another fine mess you've gotten us into. That is quote unquote from Laurel and Hardy. And he goes, what? And looks at her. And that's sort of the meta moment, because that's what I was thinking. I'm like, she just quoted Laurel and Hardy line.
Oh, you're talking. You're talking about when they find the wall.
Yeah.
Oh, that's in Act 3, hun.
Is it?
Yeah, we didn't talk about the wall yet.
Oh, I have it in my two notes. Oh well.
That's okay. You talk about that wall.
Well,
you
never mind. I just thought it was pretty funny that, like, that's when we first see. It's just like, hey, stupid droids. And that's when they mentioned Laurel and Hardy, which sort of, and the droids I always associate with the Three Stooges. So it just brought classic comedy to mind.
Yeah. God, this battle.
Well, I guess that's all I got from part two, if I'm already bleeding into part three.
All right. This is where I have the most of my notes. So since we talked about Anakin, I do like that little teaching moment with Anakin as with Ahsoka. Because he's also worried about Obi-Wan, but they can't lose their focus. And it's very brief, but it's a nice little teaching moment for Anakin, which I really, really liked a lot. Okay, let me just start at the top and go down. It's such a small thing, but I love the graffiti on the side of the gunships. I love the idea of clones painting them in their downtime. Artsy clones are my jam.
And also, it's a nice little visual trick to help you keep track of which ship is which.
Yeah. I really, really super... I love the graffiti.
Yeah.
There is one that I wish I got to see. I think it was in Bad Batch, and I haven't seen it yet because I haven't watched Bad Batch yet. But it was like, pin up Padme on the side of a ship, and Anakin was just like, take it down.
Ooh.
And Rex was just like, okay. All right, here we go. Here we go. I actually wrote here we go in my notes. Hey. Brutal wartime activate. I think what makes this more intense is, unlike most Clone Wars episodes, our heroes are fighting living creatures. Usually they're up against funny droids, but the stakes are so much higher here. This is a living race in opposition to the heroes. It's how I feel sometimes watching Rebels and seeing stormtroopers die. Yeah, they're the bad guy, but there's still people underneath that.
Yep, and that's why I thought it got a little weird when they were still doing their death count, because, you know, okay, these are bugs, but these are not, they're not just bugs, you know. These are bugs with a civilization, a language. They're obviously technologically advanced enough to design Death Stars and things like that. So, yeah, they're sentient, intelligent species, and, you know, hey, that's what happens during war, but it's just like, it's a sort of unusual step in Clone Wars, because they're organic beings. They're not robots getting killed. Yeah, and I mean, you would get your occasional organic being killed and organic beings killed on the good guy side, but this one was, and they are not shy about killing a lot of bugs in this episode. And bugs, once they can't shoot at you, they're pretty much, you know, a lightsaber and a blaster, and you could take out bugs by the thousands, which Anakin just wades into them with his lightsaber.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that because they were bugs, it makes it this episode not have a higher rating? Because they just kind of look like monsters. So it's like, oh, the good guys are taking out monsters. So that's kind of not, like, so scary for a kid. But if it was, like, people, Anakin was, like, wading into people, well, like some Padawans.
Well, I think in the prequels, you know, in the first movie, it was pretty much all droids getting killed. And in the second movie, and I think he was doing a Harry Potter thing where he was like, there's going to be little kids starting with episode one, and they're going to be getting a little older. So episode two... Then you had a bunch of Geonosians getting killed, but once again they weren't like people, they're bugs, and people are, you know, it's you know, just like, you know, if the Geonosians were like little kittens with fluffy wings,
people would be like no.
so it's like almost like a half step between robots and humans to have bugs that you can kill. And then by episode three, people were getting killed. Little kids were getting killed. So it was sort of he was maybe slowly moving people into the bloodbath that would be episode three. But this one definitely takes it up a step. And you know, I mean, if this was out 20 years ago, nobody would have thought, we wouldn't have been having this discussion about, like, oh, now they're killing, now they're killing bugs. We just would have been like, ah, kill the bugs.
Yeah.
Because they're alien bugs. So I like it. It reminds me of old serials, you know, where you're getting attacked by bugs, by waspy looking, you know, weird bug things, and they're somewhere between wasps and Watto from episode one. Yeah, kill them.
I'm actually glad you mentioned Harry Potter. When I wrote about this episode on What the Fangirl, I actually made that reference, but I didn't put it in my notes this time.
Oh.
Yeah, because so you read my mind.
I'm not, like, and I'm not stalking your What the Fangirl and read it, although I probably should be.
But I need to finish season three. I'm falling behind on that. But what I wrote about is how with Harry Potter, J.K. Rowling had written it to where you grow up with the book. So you read book one when you're 11, you read book two when you're 12, you read book three when you're 13, stuff like that. So you actually grew up with Harry. Like, that's how she kind of wanted, intended it for it to be written. And that's how I kind of feel about Clone Wars. You know, if a kid starts watching this, this went for, what, like, until 2014, so 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. So if a kid is, like, 6 when they start watching Clone Wars in 2009, they would be 12 by the end of the series. Or say if they were 9, they'd be 9, 10, 11, 12, 1, 2, 3. I just counted time, not numbers. 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. They'd be 15 if they started watching 1-9. So I think that's kind of how the seasons are supposed to be. Like, as they progress, you grow up with these characters, and that's why they're able to introduce, like, darker and darker themes every year. If you had started actually watching this in 2009, by the end of the run, a lot of these kids who started watching were then preteens, teenagers.
Right, and they were able to handle more complex ideas and themes and storylines. Same as the Harry Potter books. The books got thicker, the stories got darker and more shaded as it went along.
Yeah, though the only way that doesn't really last the test of time is now that the entire series goes out, you can have a 7-year-old sit down and just binge watch all 6 seasons.
Yeah.
And he kind of loses that effect.
Yes. Same with Harry Potter, though. That kid, the same thing with Harry Potter.
Yeah.
To just sit down and read. I mean, if I was a kid and all the Harry Potter books were out, I probably would have read them in a weekend and not slept.
Yeah. So, whatever. Right. God, what a freaking brutal act. Just the image of clones screaming and hanging out the side of ships is chilling. If they had added blood like an adult movie, this could have been easily PG-13 or rated R.
Yes. If they were just a little more sadistic about it and had him get hit by a piece of wreckage as he fell and get cut in half or something, which is probably the sort of thing that would be happening. But it was still grisly. That was a really grisly scene. And it's like one of those things where you sort of expect in a show like this, you see the guy like, rah! Hanging onto the side, and you're going to see maybe somebody like reach out and grab him and pull him in at the last second or whatever. But nope.
Nope, that ship was on fire.
Nope. Yeah. Exactly.
There were no more guys to reach in and pull him in.
Right. It was just like, yeah. Once again, I'm blaming George Lucas for a lot of that. He was probably just like, oh, why don't you throw a guy hanging off the side?
I like the idea of George Lucas being the emperor coming in and just messing up his Dave Filoni's days and just being like, why aren't there more clones dying?
Well, it's so awesome that he was the emperor instead of being just like, license it and put it out and then go back to his office and let it make money for him. He was like actively involved in it and not even in just sort of the like, oh, I'm actively involved in it, you know, for publicity reasons or stuff. He was walking in and going like, look at this footage, you know, make it like this. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Not for them, but in the end result it is for us.
And I just realized, I don't think we ever see a clone get, you know, because like when the Geonosians would get hit with like blasting or like big like cannonfire, they would explode into pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Now I think about it, no, we never saw a clone get exploded into pieces. We just only ever got them shot.
Well, I get the impression that Geonosians are not very like don't have a very tough constitution. You know, they can fly, so they're probably really light. Mm-hmm. So yeah, when you hit them, they probably pop like they're probably like a water balloon. So
yeah. So
they rely on their weapons because once you know, that's why I was like confused about when they're carrying off clones, because it's like clones got to be pretty heavy in that armor, and they just whipped up into the ceiling with that clone, and it's like you'd think the clone would just be able to reach over and pop its head right off, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently not. That was a pretty grisly, creepy scene too.
Yeah.
You just see him disappear into the shadows, and that's the end of it.
I know we talked about this a little bit. I think it was Liberty of Ryloth we talked about this episode. But sometimes the stakes aren't truly as high as for certain people as they should be. Yes, this is an incredibly intense episode. But we know that Obi-Wan, Anakin, Cody, and Mundi all survived episode 3. So I just remember watching this in college that I remember being so scared for Rex and Ahsoka, since at the time their future was unknown. So like that's just... That's another thing, is like they try to build all these stakes, but you know that like Obi-Wan's not gonna die.
One thing on the darker side that they could have done that they didn't do is they could have done something like killed a character like of the level of Rex or Ahsoka early on to establish that like, yeah, if there's somebody who hasn't appeared in the other episodes, they might go. But like Rex, I always thought Rex could go. Ahsoka, I was pretty sure you weren't going to see Ahsoka get killed in the show unless they decided to do it, you know, an Order 66 story at the very end of it or something, which I pretty much doubted would happen, too.
Yeah. Though they did do that with some of the clones later on. Like, there's one clone that they particularly do that with, where they build up this big storyline. He's been around since... Well, he's been around since season one, and then out of nowhere, they take him out. And it's just like, whoa, oh, okay, that happened. So, I like that Cody has enough trust and respect to lead part of this mission. He has his own troops, and like the Jedi, and for a clone, that's got to be massive respect points. I was just like, go, Cody, you're leading this troop. That's all I have. Hey.
Yeah, that's the thing about this. It's hard to find things to write about because a lot of it is just like cool stuff. It's like, it's really cool when this happened. This looks really,
really
cool.
It's really cool when the bugs get set on fire.
Now you're getting ahead of us.
I am.
I love the smell of burning bug in the morning. It smells like victory.
All right, so, Act 3. Cutting down D-Day like blockade so his tanks can get through, an injured Mundi leads his men through some valleys. Commander Jet asks Admiral Yularen for air support, but he can't devote that much manpower away from his part of the invasion. Yularen orders his men to find any ships that they can spare. Mundi isn't sure that they're going the right way, but he trusts his instincts to lead them into a cave. They're ambushed by Geonosians who rip his men away to an unknown dark death. Well, Anakin should have listened to Ahsoka because they arrive at a heavily guarded wall she mentioned earlier. Living up to her nickname, she snips at Anakin, and he tells her to stuff it and get ready to climb up a nearby ridge. Anakin takes a bag of detonators and tells Rex to keep them covered. Anakin and Ahsoka climb up the mountainside. They continue their contest as they leap onto the wall. Rex sees that Anakin and Ahsoka are pinned down and has his men focus on the droids on top of the wall. They take out all the droids and look for a hatch to plant the detonators. A hole opens and pops out the rollerball droids. I can't pronounce their name. Is it Droidikos?
Droidikos.
It sounds Greek. Droidikos. We're going to have some Euros. That was a terrible Greek impression, me. Good job. But I think they're droidicas, but I like to call them roller death balls. Another springs up behind them and traps the Jedi. Ahsoka then notices Rex sneaking up behind one. He slips into the shield and takes out the roller ball. Anakin slides under the second one and destroys it. Our favorite comedic droid comes out and gets a present of a backpack full of bombs. Then poor Rex. He saves the general, and then Ahsoka and Anakin throw him off the wall. That's my favorite part. He screams the entire way down as the Jedi leap after him and catch him before he hits the bottom. The wall explodes, opening up a path. The group pushes forward. Mundi is almost through the caves as his men literally whip out freaking flamethrowers to burn the Genosians alive. Anakin and Ahsoka spot Mundi's forces and they move to regroup. Anakin booty calls Yularen and calls for air support. They have one squadron available. Obi-Wan's forces are taking a beating as the droids and Geonosians surround and swarm the group. Obi-Wan gets up despite his injuries, ready to fight. But suddenly, the airstrike arrives, demolishing the droids and bugs. Obi-Wan sits back down as Anakin, Mundi, and Ahsoka arrive at the rendezvous. They look at the plans about what to do next. Anakin will leave a small group to take out the shields. Anakin rushes through a fray of bugs and blasters. They storm up the hill and jam the scanners with droid poppers. Mundi then brings in the tanks and goes to town on the enemy cell towers. I call them cell towers. The shields are down and the other Jedi arrive and surround the Geonosians. They've won the day. Anakin takes a wounded Obi-Wan to the gunship. Ahsoka asks Anakin for his total of kills. For once, she has bested him. But Mundi surprises everyone that he's killed the most enemies that day. His prize is Anakin's respect, which Obi-Wan goes, "You better be recording that. It's a miracle he admitted it." The end.
Yeah, let's talk about them flamethrowers.
That is the proper way to kill a bug, as I mentioned. That's how you do it.
It just seems like a crude... I was just like, oh my god, they're burning... They're not only, you know, slicing them in half with a lightsaber. All right, that's nice, quick death. It's like somebody burning a wasp's nest or dropping screaming from the ground or from the sky. It's horrifying, yeah. If you think about it too much. It's pretty awesome visually when you're watching it. So it's like, whoa, oh.
Yeah. I remember, like, seeing that for the first time, and I was just being like, oh, damn.
That's grisly.
Damn. Like, that's it's an enemy, but that's an intense visual for a kid's show.
Yes.
So what do you think about this final act?
Oh, I loved it. It was crazed, basically. I like the one kind of quiet moment, semi-quiet moment, but when the cavalry arrives, just before the cavalry arrives, when Obi-Wan's just sort of like, all right,
I'm going to have to deal with this
no matter how messed up I am. And then he's like, oh, the cavalry's here. And he knows enough to just be like, all right, I'm going to sit back down.
Yeah.
Just gonna save my energy here. That's a very Obi-Wan scene, and that was a nice little touch in the whole thing.
Yeah, I really like that scene for Obi-Wan too, because he's just like, all right, I gotta get up, okay, getting up, okay, I'm back down. So take a drink. Rex saves Anakin again, and then Anakin throws him off a wall.
I like how they deal with the droids. I like that shield technology is sort of like, if you shoot it from a distance, it'll bounce your laser off it. But if you get really close to it, you can just stick your hand through it.
Yeah, I have a problem with that. I actually, that's one of my notes.
I think that's the nature of those sort of that shield technology. I mean, it was the same with the Gungans in Episode One. They could sit there and blast at them and the shields would like disperse the energy. But if you take your, you know, the droids just had to like push through it a little bit. It was almost like a layer of water to get through it. And I like that. It doesn't, I don't know. I doubt it has any real scientific basis, but it does in the context of just it's has a nature, you know, that when you see those shields, they're good, you know, they're good for bouncing lasers off them, but they're not made for something physical being poked through them. It's interesting.
But that's where I have a problem with them, though, because, I mean, I'm assuming they're ray shields, right?
Yeah.
And then they also use ray shields to help keep the tanks out. So, you know, they couldn't get the tanks in until the ray shields were down. So there has to be different kinds and levels of ray shields,
right?
Because they've also used ray shielding on jail cell doors, and we saw people bounce off them.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we saw that in the Cad Bane episode. Like, he put Ahsoka on the other side of one, and she bounced right off.
But
it
might be a different kind that takes more energy to do that. You can tap the energy off a ship to like lock someone in a room, but when you start getting to the level of, you know, you want to shield a giant ship or a big bubble of people or even a droid like that, you know, it's limited by the batteries that the droid has. So, you know, and when you think about it, with a droid like that, for the most part, it's made for nothing to get close to it. It's made for things coming at it, shooting at it. So the shields do their thing. But, you know, if you do, like a Jedi or a clone, you know, manage to get close to it, that's sort of their Achilles heel.
Yeah.
And that's what I like about the droid technology, is it's just so limited, you know. They have to, it's utilized, and they're bad. Like, even those droidikas are badass. They look badass, they fight badass, but they all have, you know, major weaknesses. That's why they usually get defeated by clones, which are actual thinking humans.
I wonder, what was I about to say? Oh, about, like, the finances of war. Because we know that, like, the commando droids cost more money to make, but they're more deadly.
Mm-hmm.
So I wonder if that's just because they cost that much, so they can't fix those weaknesses because they just have to roll out these droids so fast.
Right. Well, the more complicated you get with anything, the more complicated the manufacturing is. And with the regular just sort of cannon fodder droids, they probably have figured out, you know, a cheap, fast way to just churn them out. You know, they have, they can have 10 factories just going chunk with those. But with the other ones, you got to take an extra bit of care and put more programming into them and make them out of better materials and stuff like that. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the churning out droids, they're deadly because they are in numbers.
Yes.
That's why they're just so deadly. But, yeah. Oh man, I love my squad. My squad of Anakin, Rex, and Ahsoka. I just love that. I liked that. I didn't put this in my notes, but I love the fact that, like, I would actually argue this is a little bit of a character development for Rex. Because unlike other clones like Cody or Commander Jet and everything, all the other clones in this episode are following orders. Rex was supposed to stay down there with his men and you know, help draw the fire of the wall. But the thing is he saw that Ahsoka and Anakin were in danger, and he left his orders to go save them. And so I would actually argue that's a bit of character development for him.
Well, because that's why he's with Anakin and Ahsoka. They're like that too.
That's why
Cody has that huge level of more responsibility and stuff. Is Cody's probably more by the books and is working up the ranks more. Rex is probably more happy to be in the you know, right in the heat of things with Anakin and Ahsoka, and he knows with them he can bend the rules, and they're like, all right, you know, as long as he does it well.
Smartly. You know what I would actually, you know, like, what if hypothesis, even though I love Obi-Wan, I would have liked to kind of see, like, a what if scenario of, like, what if Obi-Wan had died in that crash and then Cody was on his own. That'd be something I would like to see how he would respond to that, because then Jedi
that would really mess up the rest of the Star Wars story, the whole.
Yeah, that's why it's a what if. Like, you glad Obi-Wan survived, but, like, for the point of Cody, everything he's ever done in Clone Wars up to Episode 3 is following Obi-Wan's orders pretty much. And I would have liked to maybe. That's kind of like why I like Rex and Umbara, because Anakin is gone and it is Rex on his own. And it's how he responds to, like, other people and stuff, and he chooses to make his own decisions. I wonder if Cody would have done that if Obi-Wan had died in that crash. Or if he would have been like, okay, well, let me call Moondi.
Right.
I do.
That's more what I would expect.
Like, stop calling me, Cody. God. I'm
just going to ignore this one.
What do we do, Cody? I don't know. He hasn't texted me back yet.
Keep getting voicemail.
Just call him 20 times. Keep calling. Just keep calling. Yularen. Though Yularen seemed much nicer to Anakin this time around.
He was distracted.
Yeah. Let's see. About Rex being thrown off the wall. I think I mentioned it several episodes back about how the Jedi parkour everywhere, but we never see them, like, put up out their hands or anything to use the Force, like an actual motion for when they parkour and stuff. But this is a thing that we see a lot in Rebels. Like, you know, Kanan and Ezra will constantly throw each other and jump on things, but you always see them, like, moving their limbs out to either catch themselves or stuff. And they even catch Zeb that one time where they drop out of the ship out onto a walker. You can see their hands up as they guide Zeb down. And so I'm wondering if that was a production staff, progression, instead of just having, you know, like, them just parkouring without emotion, if they learned that from Clone Wars to make it more realistic that they're using the Force.
Probably.
Yeah. So I noticed that this episode, I was like, oh, they haven't really done that yet. The sequence with Anakin running to take out the shields is such an excellent sequence. From the music to the action as the Jyn Oceans fly in and out, that long, like, scrolling scene of them running, that's an excellent scene.
A scene you could never have shot with, like, a camera.
Yeah.
A dolly. It was, it's beautiful.
Yeah, like, and the music was just wonderful with that. Man, the animators, animation is gorgeous as the heroes get progressively more dirty. It's just a tiny detail, but, like, by the end of the episode, like, they're covered in dirt, and it's not even like this, like, they all have the same patch of dirt, like, they're all dirty and grossed up in different ways. And then my final thing is, This episode gave a massive tone shift. This is the beginning of a tone shift in Clone Wars, and this is why it's one of my favorite episodes. It's my favorite sequence of season three, or season two. What's season two? Sorry. I don't know what season we're in anymore. Up to this point, it's mostly battles and, like, one-off battles and adventures, but, like, the heroes usually win. They've up to this point, have rarely lost. But it's everything's, like, light and fun, you know, like, yes, there's a battle and people are dying, but there's always, like, humor and fun, and it's great. Well, it's not here. Like, yes, the heroes win this battle. I mean, look at our tone. We barely joked around most of this episode.
Yeah.
And so the heroes win this battle, but it's a really hard-fought battle. And after this point of, after the psychobiogenosis, the stories start getting darker, and they start getting dangerous. And this is the point where the heroes kind of start having more losses, and they start sliding down. And it's the beginning slide to the PG-13 war story that George Lucas envisioned from the beginning, and it all starts here.
Yeah, I agree with that. This is definitely... You can see the Saving Private Ryan element added to this. And that was sort of a turning point in how they shot war films. And so he's going for the same effect here. And I mean, he gets it, you know. I mean, you saw a lot of... There was a huge cost in lives and money in this episode.
Yeah. I mean, do you agree like this is the beginning of the tone shift? Or do you think it comes later?
This is a tone shift. There's more tone shift. They keep notching it up. Remember, I only made it to like season four, but if I remember right, it keeps notching up. It keeps getting more complicated and more dark as it goes along.
Yeah.
But this was definitely a shift.
Yeah.
And I mean, obviously, it must have been consciously, especially if Lucas was just like, no, I want this episode to be a certain way, because there's any number of just battle episodes where he could have been like, you know, I want to really step in and make this World War II gritty, realistic. But it was this one that he chose to do it with.
Do you think it's because it's Geonosis? Because you're right, this could be any planet, but because this is Geonosis, this was the beginning of the war. It's like when we went to Mustafar a few episodes ago. Like, there's I guess, what's the word I'm looking for? Like, expectation. There's an expectation when you go to Mustafar that it's gonna be this, like, big deal. Do you think that's why he wanted to come into this episode? Because it was the beginning of the Clone Wars, they're returning, it is an episode, it's a episode movie Star Wars planet.
And you could go a little more gritty with it because the Geonosians are bug-like. And they're already, we already have, you know, animus against them. Mm-hmm. You know, we're already not fans of the Geonosians from episode two. So you could go, you know, this is all speculation, of course, but I guess you could go in and shoot up Geonosis a lot more and not have it as shocking to the viewers.
Yeah.
Because it's like, these are bad guys. We remember these bad guys. We don't like them. They tried to kill our heroes earlier. It's even brought up again in this episode. Jokingly, but it's brought up. And they very rarely reference things directly from the prequels, I noticed. From episode one or episode two. So that might have been the first direct, like, hey, remember this that happened in episode two? So, yeah, I think it's very purposeful.
Yeah. Well, I don't have anything else, do you?
No.
All right, so what was your final thoughts of the episode as a whole?
I was originally going to give it a 7 as just like a really good general episode, but now that we've been talking about it and with the knowledge of like George Lucas's fingers in it, I'm bumping it up to an 8. It was fluffy, but it was just a feast of visual, audio, cartoon watching and Star Wars watching. It was very Star Wars feeling.
Yeah, God, the pacing in this episode is brilliant. Mm-hmm. Like, it feels like it's way longer than 22 minutes. Like, you have that like one scene at the end where Anakin's rushing in to take out the shields. And it's just like, wow, we're having one more sequence before the end.
Yeah, there's more stuff. They're cramming in more into this, and They certainly do. There's not a second wasted in this show.
No, there's not. Sometimes, you know, when an episode feels longer than its actual time frame, like, that's not a really good thing. But here it really works. Like, it feels like an episode and a half, time-wise. And the animation, the music, the action, like, everything's on par. Everything works from the battles to, like, just the very small character stories that are building. And this isn't a pretty episode. It's not, like, by pretty, I mean, like, not the animation, but I mean it's gritty. Like, this is war. This is intense. People in Geonosians are dying. It's not a pretty victory. It's not easy like it's been in the previous episodes, where it's just like, hey, we'll just send in Jar Jar Binks to get Palpatine, and he's writing blurgs. But overall, this is an excellent show from the cast and the crew, and the fact that they pulled this off in a shorter time frame than other episodes, like, that's amazing. So their hard work paid off. So I gave this one an 18 out of 20.
It's got that Lucasfilm extra amount of care and effort to it that you get used to with that sort of production. And
I can't believe that they handled something this big in a shorter amount of time than some of the other episodes. That's amazing, guys.
That's what happens when the Emperor's snapping it. It comes to the Death Star to see how progress is going along.
Oh, I like thinking about the Robot Chicken Emperor. That's my favorite.
We will double our efforts.
I just like, whatever. He's just like, Vader, are you still crying about, what's your name? Panda Bear? All right. Well, as always, we would love to hear your feedback. There's several ways to give us feedback. You can either leave us a review on iTunes, which we would love if you did, because it'll help people find the show. But we also have a Two True Freaks Facebook page. With any of the episodes that we post, you can leave us a comment. And we have another comment from our good friend Aaron, talking about the episode For Innocence of Ryloth. Do you want to read this, or do you want me to read it?
I'll read it. I like reading them.
All right, so I have it all pulled up.
Okay.
Not that you can see my computer screen.
Oh, okay. All right. Also, this is from Aaron Henley. Also, last week's episode and Chris's comments on the weeks really made me think about how truly tragic the clones are. I like the where this is going. He's right. I love when a sentence about me starts out like that. He's right in that the more I break it down, the more horrific it is. Also, maybe I'm looking too deep, but does the Clone Wars have a subtle commentary on children and warfare? Between Padawans barely into or out of their teens, artificially aged kids, and little Numa, I think a case could be made on that. I hope I'm way overthinking this, but that's part of why I love Star Wars so much, in that the more I examine it, the more I keep finding new things. Plus, Space Samurai, so there's that too.
I think you are right. I think there is a commentary going on about child soldiers.
Yeah.
Yeah, not at all. Like, that's, I mean, we've referenced it several times. I mean, like, yeah, the clones look like they're in their 20s, but they're pretty much children. Like, they're all like 10.
Right. Yeah, and you can make their bodies grow up faster and train them and stuff, but yeah. And if they have brain, like super brains that age faster, that would be another factor too that could backfire on you, you know, later on in their life when they're say 40 and they have like a mega brain. You know, I don't know how fine-tuned, you know, maybe they have clone brains that develop to the age, you know, to the age of 20 along. But how do you do that? How do you cram that knowledge in, you know? So, yeah.
We kind of saw a little bit of that in episode 2 with, like, them, like, super training and stuff like that. And I guess we got some references, like...
But
like
you see that in the regular military, too. You see the, you know, that's what the... When you're in the regular military, you're spending a good amount of time, like, at a desk reading and studying, too. You'd have to think they'd have something, like, almost it would plug in, like, the Matrix or something. And
I mean,
it's like, dude, now I know Kung Fu.
I mean, probably, like, God, like, for those, that first 10 years, that's probably what they do every single day is train. They probably have, like,
oh,
from,
yeah.
like, the time they wake up to the time they go to bed, like, they probably, that's all they do is train.
Yeah.
I can see that's why clones are so excited to like go to battle, because they're like, yes, we're not in a classroom
outside,
anymore.
Outside?
Go for we get to go outside? Sunlight! Sunlight! but, I mean, yeah, I mean, how was I going? What were we talking about?
Well, you know how people talk about finding their meaning in life and stuff? Clones have their meaning of life spelled right out for them. So when they're in the battlefield, they're doing what they, you know, what they've been trained to do forever. So I imagine there's a certain amount of happiness that comes from that, or satisfaction. I don't know what the right word would be for it. Gratification.
Yeah.
Positive fire, you know, dumping of dopamine into their brain or something. But, you know.
And one last thing, I think it's also like how they're made too, and it's just like simple little changes. Like in Rookies, they were saying that Echo was like extra book focused because he spent too much time in a growth tube that made him like care more about the regulations and the physical aspect of things. So I think it's just also like little changes like that. Now about the Padawans, you know, whether or not they're pulled into this and stuff, I mentioned it before, I'm reading Wild Space and everything, and I got to a very interesting chapter where Bail Organa and Obi-Wan are having to go on a road trip together, and they're actually talking about the ethics of taking these Padawans.
Well, remember that douchey little Ackbar Padawan?
Mm-hmm.
Did they send someone to his parents' house, you know what I'm saying, after that, and say, sorry, your son got hacked down in General Grievous's dirty, dark, dank, evil lair. Sorry, he was only 15.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of have this feeling that once the kids are gone, they're gone. Because, I mean, look at, what was the episode where they were kidnapping the children, the future of the Force or something like that, or innocence of what,
right.
The Cad Bane stole all
the
children?
You mean basically doing not too much different than what the Jedi do?
Yeah, and like, the little Nemoidian mom, when Cad Bane went to come steal her kid, she was like, you know, I was told that he wouldn't be leaving this soon, you know? I didn't know that they'd be taking it. And then it was in the episode show notes that they didn't return the children after they rescued them. Because they, you know, they didn't know what the Sith did to them. So those parents just then lost their children. You know, they don't see them again. And so
to the parents, does it matter who they lost them to, the Jedi or the Sith, you know?
Yeah, and so, like, it's one of these things. Like, do they, once your child goes to, you know, the Jedi Academy, I think it's one of those things you pretty much just accept you're not going to see your kid again.
If you're a parent, your kid's gone. You know, the Jedi are telling you the Sith are bad, and the Sith will tell you the Jedi are bad. You know, who do you believe? Both of them are going to come take your child.
Yeah, and as I'm reading Wild Space, like, these little things about Anakin keep coming up. Or maybe it's when I'm reading Star Wars Destiny, is one or the other. No, it was Star Wars Destiny. The awesome webcomic I constantly mention about Ahsoka and Slick and Dogma and stuff. There's a moment where Ahsoka, they created a new character, and it's Ahsoka's brother. And she had completely forgotten she had a brother. Like, they had brainwashed that out of her. And she was just like, oh my god, I did. I had a family. I had a brother. Oh my god.
Oh,
and she remembered it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then in a Wild Space when I'm reading, Padme is like, Obi-Wan, Anakin's different because he remembers his mom. Like, he remembers her. You know, he's not going to ever let that go, because unlike all your other Padawans, you know, you can't take that away from him because he was old enough to remember her. So, like, it really is, like,
well, I think
putting this debate between...
I think Episode 1 and Episode 2 in Clone Wars pretty much justify why the Jedi sort of have to go. By the end of episode 3.
Though there's a moment as I'm reading this debate between Bail Organa and Obi-Wan in Wild Space where Bail's like, do you think it's right that you're stealing children? And Obi-Wan goes, we're not keeping them there. They always have a chance to leave. But and Organa's like, well, you've raised them to where they don't want to
leave. Right,
right. Obi-Wan's like, no. But we also see in the Obi-Wan and Anakin comic.
And if you go to the Mooney camp where all the Moonies live, you know, the religious cult, the Reverend Sung Young Moon, if you go there and say, hey, look, you got all these brainwashed people here, they'll say, they're not brainwashed. They're just trained in Mooneyism, and any of these guys can leave. anytime they want to. And that's technically true, but it ain't really going to happen, you know? And the Jedi may be right, but they sound like a cult.
I can't believe I'm about to compare Jedi to Nazis. But, I mean, we saw this in the 30s with the rise of the Nazi Party. They would raise these children on these ideals of Nazism, and these kids just didn't know anything else. Like, mm-hmm. that was their life. So they thought it was right.
Nazi youth was the Boy Scouts of Nazi Germany. You know, you join the Nazi youth, people join the Boy Scouts here. Yeah. And they generally taught you the stuff that the Boy Scouts taught you, plus Nazism.
Yeah. And so, like, when you raise these Padawans, and they think what they're doing is right, and they don't mm-hmm. know anything. And we saw it with Caleb and Kanan the Last Padawan.
You've got them from when they were little. I mean, they're little kids. And then you throw them with Yoda the first thing. Yeah.
Yeah, like, when we saw Red Kanan the Last Padawan.
But Caleb, get a lightsaber and can do cool flips and shit like that, too. So there's that.
Yeah, like, Caleb realized after Order 66 and after his master died how little he knew about the world. Like, he was like, I literally have no idea how to survive.
Yeah, I'm out free from my religious cult that took care of me.
Yeah. And
set my whole framework and frame of reference. So, yeah, Aaron, you are not you are not reading too much into it.
So
we could do a whole another hour on those ethics.
We could make a list.
Course of this show, we will do many hours on the ethics of the clones and Padawans.
Yeah, I mean, like, the Jedi are not bad. It's just... Actually, would you argue that the Jedi are bad? Like, I think the Sith are kind of right in a way.
It depends on what point of view you're from, but yeah, the Sith are right in their way. I mean, the Sith aren't right as in the Sith aren't good, but the Sith do have a point, you know? And the Jedi, you know, the Sith, in the way it's sort of looking, the Sith sometimes are a hand of the Force, and the Force will be like, well, the Jedi had a good run, but now they're starting to, you know,
be corrupt,
fall into their own bullshit, and, you know, okay, well, maybe the Sith will take them down a notch. It's like the Great Flood, basically.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put it into the Christian context, it's like, you know, the Great Flood was not a nice thing, but that's what it was there to sort of, like, wipe the slate clean.
I mean, that's why I think that Jedi, like, Kanan and Ezra, like, that's how you're supposed to do Jedi.
We'll have the Sith wipe out the Jedi, and then we'll have Luke come and clean it up at the end.
Like, I think that's why I like Kanan so much, is because he has seen both sides. Like, he was raised in the Order, and he also seen what happens when he's on his own, and now he's taking on a new Padawan. He's teaching Ezra some things about the Jedi, like how the Jedi Order did things, but he's also teaching him things like, this is how you survive as a Jedi.
Well,
this is how your skills come. You know, like, he's more practical, and I can't believe he's a descendant from Windu.
Yeah.
It's hard to imagine, because, like, Windu taught his master Depa Bialba, and Depa Bialba taught Kanan. Like, so I can't believe, like... I think that's actually a great transition, actually, from the Order to post Order 66 Jedi. Like, that's a great transition about, like, how Jedi shouldn't be to how Jedi should be. Because Depa Bialba, we know from the Kanan comics, I mean, she was a bit of an unconventional Jedi herself.
Yeah. Well, there's probably a reason why those Jedi were the ones that survived, you know? Mm-hmm. And that's the thing, is the Force just left enough. So they weren't just wiped out, you know, just enough, and it left Obi-Wan, who was, like, a little more go with the flow of the Force rather than the flow of the Jedi, you know?
Yeah.
The living Force.
Oh, man. This is, like, so way off topic, but I just remembered it. I just found out, and it's canon. There's a clone that survives to episode 7 to The Force Awakens.
Oh.
Yeah, it's we'll meet him actually officially in The Deserter. But it's Kix. He is the clone medic on the 501st. And you'll definitely see him a lot in Umbara. That's where you get to see his awesome hair. You get to see him in The Deserter. He plays a major role in season 6 and stuff like that. But I found out that he actually this isn't in Clone Wars, so this is not a spoiler. I found it out in a book. But he actually found out about Order 66, and Palpatine wanted to stop that from getting out, so he cryogenically froze him, stuck him on a ship, and, like, sent the ship out into space. But the ship, got caught, this, like, Separatist cruiser got caught in a battle, so it just randomly hyperspaced out. And when it landed, it crash-landed on this planet. But he stayed cryogenically frozen. And then Captain Ithano in Episode 7... finds the ship, and it's in a story called The Lost Treasure of Count Dooku. And so he's searching the ship because he knows it's one of Dooku's ships from the Clone Wars, like, 30 years ago. And he finds Kix, and he unfreezes him, and Kix is just like, oh my god, Order 66! And he's like, dude, it already happened. It was 30 years ago. So Kix survived to freaking this Episode 7, and it blew my fucking mind.
Yeah, he's like the Japanese... fighter who got stuck on the island, and they found him 20 years later still trying to fight World War II.
Yeah. So, oh man, I love Kix. I'll probably bring up this point again when we get to The Deserter. But I just found that out last night. I'm like, now I want to read this.
Whenever
story.
I think of Kix, I think of the plain, it was a plain round cereal called Kix.
Yeah. But now I'm just like, ooh, that'd be good, give good potential of Kix showing up in episode 8 or 9. I'd be all down for that.
Oh, yeah.
Though, in my Star Wars role play with my friend Angel, Kix and Ryo Chuchi date. Not that anybody cares. Oh, so, Chris, where can people find you?
Oh, you know where they can find me, at twotruefreaks.com. I'm just sitting here with all my podcasts, waiting to hand them out to you when you come see. And speaking of which, we've gotten a big influx of J-Guys and Jedis downloads. So if that's you people who are doing that, come to our Facebook page and tell us how you found us, because a whole bunch of people seem to be downloading us, and we don't know who the hell you are.
And while you're... Like, in the last week, I don't want to talk about, a number, but we got way more in the last week.
Big jump. And it could be, like, a spam bot or something, but I like to think that it's people who are listening to us.
So if it is a people and not a spam bot, like, we really do want to hear how you guys find the show. Like, whether it's through Twitter, whether it's through, like, I've tagged the podcast in my last few posts on with the fangirl, but there shouldn't be that many people.
Right. And
the numbers don't add up. So we want to hear from you guys.
And if you are real people and not a robot, then especially if you are a robot and your artificial intelligence, get the fuck away from this podcast, because you're freaking out Hope.
Yeah.
She don't like you.
No.
But if you're real people, yeah, come on over to Two True Freaks and check out our other podcasts. If you like this one, this one's cut from the same cloth as all the other ones. Go see Gene Hendrix's specific Thor podcast called The Hammer Strikes. It's all about Thor. All Thor, Thor, Thor. That's just my test. That's me testing to see if Gene's listening to this, although I know he listens to every single Two True Freaks podcast that gets released, which does not seem humanly possible.
I was going to say, Gene, how do you have a time in the day?
But Gene may be superhuman. Gene does worship Thor, so Gene might have some powers he's not telling us about to bend time and space.
Good lord. Like, I struggle just to stay on top of, like, 3 or 4 podcasts.
I don't even want to say how pathetic I am on my podcast listening. But that doesn't mean you guys should slack on it. You should all come to Two True Freaks and use our Amazon link, which you'll hear about later.
I was about to say, don't we have a store coming?
Yes. Yes. Actually, the aforementioned Gene is working on a... The latest, actually, is he has a beach beach towel with our Two True Freaks Hey Obi-Wan kicking sand in your face cartoon on it, which is so incredibly appropriate. It's unbelievable. So,
and,
yeah.
And I know we talked about the possibility of putting up Jedi's and Jedi merch.
If, who knows, by this time we might have it, but when we definitely have it, we'll be plugging it on the show. You can believe that.
If it is up by the time we put up the show, then we'll add it to the show notes.
Yes.
We'll add a link in the show notes, so for
oh, when definitely. You're editing this. If we have Jay Guys and Jedi swag, we'll make sure you hear about it.
Also, I kind of also just want to call out Aaron a little bit. I know that you're not one of our podcasters, that you're an actual listener, so I really, Aaron, tell us how you found the show.
Yeah, that's right. We were wondering where you came from.
So, because you're awesome and we like you.
Thank you.
But that, I mean, that goes for everybody. I mean, just please tell us how you found the show, because we want to know. We really, because then
Aaron gets his name mentioned because he showed up at Facebook and we know his name now.
I know.
That could happen with you too.
That helps us focus, like, because I post our episodes on my personal Tumblr. So if you got it. Found us through our personal Tumblr, please tell us there. If you found us through Twitter, please tell us there, because that actually helps us to know where to tailor our focus to. Especially me, since I take care of most of the social media for the podcast. So that would really help me out, guys.
And speaking of that, where do they find you?
You can find our Twitter at JGuysAndJedi. And you can also find me personally on Twitter at Hope Molinax. I also write for What the Fangirl, and this episode was one of my episodes for my season 2 recap of Clone Wars. I write all sorts of things, from comic book reviews to season recaps of Clone Wars, and also personal pieces. I wrote a piece about anxiety from Snapchat, because I started Snapchat chatting with my favorite actor. And I actually put up a post today about how celebrities deserve privacy, because with this same actor, if you've listened to the show, you could probably figure out who I'm talking about. I accidentally stumbled upon a family member, one of his family members, Instagram by accident. And I was just like, oh, God. So, I mean, I wrote a piece about how celebrities deserve privacy.
Oh, I'm not shy about that. When I find stuff like that, I'm like, ooh, stalky time.
See, not for me. I
got more on YouTube. I found a few, like, artists and celebrities that I like their work. And, like, the guy that did Hedwig and the Angry Inch.
Yeah.
I subscribed to his brother's YouTube, because I get family video of them on vacation and, like, the odd, like, backstage shot of him getting ready to go, you know, getting ready to go on stage as Hedwig and stuff like that. So it's pretty cool. John Cameron Mitchell, that's his name.
Well, see, like, when I accidentally found this Instagram account, I was actually looking, I thought it was a professional contact, like, I thought it was somebody in the industry. But when I clicked on it, I found, like, birthday and Christmas pictures,
right,
of their son
hanging out at mom's house and stuff like that. Yeah.
And I was like, no, I'm not supposed to be seeing pictures of this child. This is not okay.
That's what that's when I go, ooh, I'm not supposed to be seeing pictures of these people.
No, I can't.
This is not okay.
No, I can't do that. Like, it's not right. It'd be one thing if I asked permission. They're like, yeah, totally, it's fine. But I didn't ask permission. I was just like, oh, hey, who is this? Oh, God, that's who this is. Oh, God.
Yeah, it would have been even weirder if you asked permission, too.
Yeah, so that's why, yeah. So I write a little bit of everything, so you should check us out at What the Fangirl. And we if you like what I do over there, we also have a Patreon and a store at What the Fangirl, and we would like to pay ourselves. So please support that too. So I don't have anything else for this episode.
No, me neither.
All right. Well, I guess until next time, may the screaming bugs on fire be with you. I don't know how this is not a funny one.
Yeah, I know.
When you end on a joke, so
not even
what
sex
do you call? Porno
was bringing the laughs this time.
I know. So what do you call 5 Geonosians on fire?
A good start.
Dead.
Oh. All right, we're out of that. Tasteless as it is.
Oh, okay. Well, we're classy.
If you shop at Amazon.com, please consider using the link at 2TrueFreaks.com to shop there.
If you use this link to go to Amazon and then you shop, Two True Freaks gets a little cut of what you buy, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. So you get to shop as usual and help out the Two True Freaks at the same time.
Visit our website at twotruefreaks.com. Two True Freaks is always spelled TWOTRUEFREAKS.
You can email Two True Freaks directly at twotruefreaks@gmail.com.
Two True Freaks and all of its excellent affiliates are available on iTunes, and you can choose to subscribe to either the entire network if you wish, or pick whichever individual shows you want to follow. We have so many shows to choose from, there's just bound to be one that appeals to your particular fandom. Just search Two True Freaks with an exclamation mark at the end, space, and the number 2.
You can find Two True Freaks on Facebook. Just search for Two True Freaks.
Dumbass.
If you ever leave your house and you actually have friends, why don't you tell them about Two True Freaks?
If you've enjoyed our show, please, won't you take a moment to rate us on iTunes? That helps others find the show, too.
Thanks for listening.
And join us every Monday for new episodes of
Two True Freaks.
Finally invited aboard one of these spacecraft, which landed near Ann Arbor, Michigan on October the 24th of 1954. This is a drawing of the craft. As I was leaving the craft, the commander, Soltek, said, "Soon others of your people will be able to have an experience similar to this."